Sandy Hook Elementary School perhaps did everything right. Its staff and teachers worked every day to create a climate that valued kindness and posted the plan for all to see. They had lockdown drills that trained everyone to stay low and quiet in the event of an emergency. A security system introduced this year required visitors to ring a bell, sign in, and produce a photo ID. After 9:30, the doors were locked. And now it's the home of one of the worst school shootings in the United States history. 20 children dead, 8 adults, including the shooter. Those who know the world of school security are already predicting what comes next. And that is, of course, a strong reaction, perhaps an overreaction. It comes from parents and schools and legislators who want to take action, understandably. Politicians will be elected on platforms of school safety. Vendors will turn up with technology and crisis plans to sell, and schools will rewrite their crisis plans and run extra drills. This morning, we talked with a school superintendent who has dealt and continues to deal with all of these issues. Dr. Douglas Huntley is superintendent of the Queensbury Union Free School District in Queensbury, New York, and is a member of the executive committee of the New York State Council of School Superintendents. Dr. Huntley, welcome to the roundtable this morning. I thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, you're welcome, Joe. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's a great pleasure to have you here. In just full disclosure, before we begin, I do want to mention that my brother-in-law is a principal under within your school district, and I just want to mention that before we go on with our conversation.
That's right.
One of the things that I think is so fascinating about issues like this is that we keep having these conversations, and it seems like we never complete them before the next horrible incident where we rev up and start talking about it again. Just what you've seen over the past few days, what do parents want to know from you? What do parents want to know from their school leaders about the safety of their school?
Well, parents want a quick response from the school about what the school is going to do, the reaction of the school, plans for the school, and communication is a critical issue in terms of dealing with parents. So that's what we've been doing at Queensbury. We have an established communication system with our parents that's already in place through Facebook, Twitter, and other forms of social media. So we were able to respond fairly quickly to parents, and the response that we got back on Facebook entries was principally positive. So our initial reaction and response, they already have. But they also want to know what we're going to do in the future. So we're going to have to plan, and we are planning for communication with parents very shortly in a face-to-face manner.
It seems that as we hear from the victims' families, those who were those surviving students who were in that building in Connecticut, and we hear from across the nation about safety at school and wondering what can be done, and in the sense of, is there such a thing as a fail-safe? Is there such a thing as 100% saying your child is going to be safe within the confines of this school building?
Well, candidly, there is no fail-safe school. I think that what we're dealing with is a societal issue, and it's going to take a strong society in order to deal with it. More specifically, regarding schools and public schools, we have some terrific challenges. Normally, in many communities, the school is the hub of the community, and that's the case in Queensbury. We're a very active campus. We have a lot going on in addition to educating children during the day. Adult programs, recreation programs, YMCA, the list is extensive, and all these programs serve the community, they're healthy for the community, but they also provide a vulnerability to the school. But even if, let's say, we were able to secure our building. Let's say hypothetically we can't, we could be able to do that, which would be a very difficult thing to do. But in addition to the school environment, we also have outdoor recess, we have field trips, we have physical education. In Queensbury's case, 98% of its students are eligible for school transportation, so we have a lot of riders, a lot of students riding the bus, 40 to 60 students on a bus. They're all vulnerable. So securing schools and making schools safe is very important, and it's a high priority for us, but there are many other areas of which we have responsibility that are outside of the school building. And we're, you know, we're working on safety protocols and procedures for those areas too, of course.
And in regards to those within the building, I think of, you look at a school district that has both the old and new, a building that may have gone up in the late 60s or early 1970s, and then because of planning and growth, there is a new school building that was built in, say, 2005 or 2006. Are they built differently with something else in mind, in the sense? And I think of this in regards to post 9/11, where airports, because of the security measures, had to change everything the way they were set up. Do you find that same thing in schools of the future will have to keep this in mind?
Absolutely. All of our schools in our district were built before Columbine and 9/11. So when we have the opportunity, and we have had the opportunity to have a capital project since then, what schools are doing is they're putting in entryways that are much different than what was known to people a decade or more ago. They're putting in sally ports where people they can't enter the building without going through some form of security, a main office or something of that nature. So schools are being built quite differently than they once were. Video is normal in schools today as a safety and security measure. So there are many ways that we can change our buildings in order to make them safe, and that's what we're doing. But of course, that takes time, it takes resources, it takes money in order to change the physical structure of our schools.
Let's talk about the resources part of that. After a tragedy like this, we all talk about what we need and what should be done. Have you seen the dollars come? Is there frustration on your front as a leader of a very large school district to come up with the money and to come up with the state and federal funding necessary to put the procedures and protocols into place that would improve a situation that parents and students are calling for?
Well, it is a frustration, and it is a challenge. It's a challenge for a state that's in a difficult fiscal environment right now to support this sort of change in school buildings, and it's a challenge for the local school district to come up with funding in order to create these sorts of physical changes. But that's not the only thing that's necessary. I think that we can continue, even though we've done an awful lot in terms of training and professional development, we can continue to provide training, and that's crucial for providing a safe environment in our schools. Staff training, faculty training, student training in emergency protocols, all of that is very important, and the physical structure is important, but also the training is important too. Neither are exclusive of one another. They need to be done at the same time.
What about law enforcement and your connection to law enforcement and having that presence on campus?
Most school districts, I would say, have very good working relationships with law enforcement. We do at Queensbury. We have the state police that are located directly across from our from our high school. We have a wonderful working relationship with the state police, also the sheriff's department, and other entities within our community. So I think one of the prevention strategies is to take advantage of our many safety professionals that we have in our communities, including police, healthcare professionals, fire departments, and that sort of thing. Just a little while ago, Queensbury hosted what we called an active shooter drill. It was a practice emergency preparedness exercise in which we involved the county sheriff's office, the state police, five fire departments, and a number of ambulance squads, and we put on this shooter drill. It was it took time to organize and carry it out, but we learned an awful lot from it. So those are things that communities can do in order to deal with increasing safety, and none of those require any change in the structure of the buildings.
If you told me, Doug, 2 weeks ago that these students were going through, that kindergartners and first graders were going through lockdown drills, and I would react that, my God, is that what it's come to, and how sad. And now, obviously, you say to yourself, well, thank God they did that. And thank God that those students were prepared, and as was the staff. And I assume that this is something that you are challenged by as a district of trying to explain to people, and of course situations like this are things that you can point to, but that it is a challenge to say you don't want to overreact, and yet you do want to be prepared.
We don't want to overreact, but these tragedies seem to be a little more prevalent now, and I think this last tragedy at Newtown is taking us to another level of safety and precautions. Who would ever dreamt that something like this would happen in a kindergarten class? It's just tragic, it's horrific, and it does take our school safety protocols and efforts to a level that we're not at right now, and we need to get there. But at the same time, it truly is a community issue. It's a societal issue. It's an issue in terms of laws and regulations. It has to involve some sort of way to control these military-style weapons. It's a multifaceted issue that needs to be resolved in a multifaceted manner. Yes, schools are primarily responsible for the safety and welfare of their children and adults and employees in the district, and we take that responsibility very seriously. We need to work collaboratively with the greater community in order to continue to receive their help and assistance also.
Let's talk about some of those facets of that, the multifaceted issue that you mentioned. Obviously, just and let's use the Newtown tragedy as an example, because right now people want to find out information about their school district. They want to find out information about their children and their neighborhood and their community. And so you have to deal with it, and stop me if I'm wrong here, but you have to deal with it with state and local officials. You have to deal with parents. You have to deal with the staff. And ultimately, you have to, I would assume, explain this to the children as well, right?
Yes, yes.
That would seem to me to be the hardest part of explaining it to the kids.
That's challenging, and We met, our administrators met over the weekend with faculty and staff in order to prepare for Monday, today, when students came back to school. So we did have our talking points and plans in place, and We also communicated with parents over the weekend in various ways, through social media and in other ways, that if their children or child is having a particular issue or is particularly moved by this tragedy, that we have counselors and psychologists waiting, and actually more than waiting, they're in classrooms right now as we speak, identifying children that might be responding in a difficult way to this matter. So yes, dealing with children immediately after a tragedy like this is very important. And parents also have ways in which they can deal with their own children. I'm sure our parents have been doing that. There are a number of resources that are available to parents, and they're very helpful resources. One is through public radio, as a matter of fact, and they're also talking with kids about the news. It's from PBS Parent. Also, mm-hmm. talking to kids about school violence is out of Parent Today, and the New York University Child Study Center has a publication called "When the News Gets Scary." So parents can turn to those sorts of resources for help.
When you think of that parent's role in all of this, and I would assume just as you want them to be as active in a student's education and what they are learning, you want them to be very active in this discussion as to school safety as well.
Yes. Yeah, they need to address, and I'm sure they are addressing the issue, explaining what has happened, keeping calm as they're having their discussion, taking the fears and of the children and their questions of their child seriously, and encouraging children to talk, listening to what they have to say. All of those things are important things to do for parents, taking the time, sitting down face-to-face without distraction, without the television and other sorts of distractions, just having a honest, open conversation, even if the child is in kindergarten or is a senior, any place in between. Open communication is one of the best ways in order to deal with these sorts of issues. And then, you know, if there is a deep-seated issue that a child has, there are resources, and we can start with the school in order to find resources to help the child.
Let me end, and I am sorry to do this to you. I'm just curious because it'll bring us to another statement, or to another segment of the show. But I just want your input as an administrator. One of the things that has come out of this is saying, you know, if those teachers were armed, or if at least someone in that school was armed, perhaps this could have been avoided. Is that within the realm of possibility as far as you're concerned as a school administrator?
School resource officers are armed. We don't have them as much as prevalently as in New York State as we once did. Having teachers armed is not something that we're not there yet, you know,
and
they would have to be trained and such. But it does bring up a good point, and the point is, when you have a perpetrator with a military-style weapon, it's a very difficult thing to defend when you're in a school setting with, you know, without any kind of defense such as that. So we train and train and train in terms of locking doors, having children move into a corner of the building, giving them training on how to evacuate, where to go, when they evacuate. So, but I will admit that all of this is responsive. You know, we try to train in areas in which we respond to these sorts of perpetrators. We need to do much more in terms of prevention.
Douglas Huntley is superintendent of the Queensbury Union Free School District in Queensbury, New York, a member of the executive committee of the New York State Council of School Superintendents. Dr. Huntley, I thank you very much for sharing your expertise and your insights with us, and most of all, your time. I thank you very much.
Well, you're welcome, and I would like to close by extending my deepest sympathies to the community of Newtown, Connecticut, on behalf of the Queensbury Union Free School District and the New York State Council of School Superintendents. Our thoughts and prayers are with Newtown.
Dr. Huntley, thank you very much. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC, Northeast Public Radio.